Welcome to the Marketing Stir podcast by Stirista, where we chat with industry leaders and get their take on the challenges facing the market. And maybe we'll have a little fun along the way. On this week's episode of the Marketing Stir podcast, AJ and Vincent chat with Brad Barnett, VP of Enterprise Marketing at Nationwide, to discuss the marketing strategies that turned a small farm insurance company into an iconic household name.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Stirista's The Marketing Stir. I am your happy host, your tan host. It's summertime. I'm getting natural tan. I've got a glow. It's because my wife got me a facial from a local place here. That's all right. I just admitted it, ladies and gentlemen. I get facials once a year to maintain this glow. It is not natural, unfortunately. It is. Who am I kidding? Anyway, it's so good to be talking to you again. I felt like it's been a while. But for those of you just tuning in, this is the Marketing Stir. We are Stirista. Who is Stirista? We just talk about ourselves for like 14 seconds. I don't know. We're a marketing technology company. We own our own business-to-business data, business-to-consumer data. We help companies access that data to help them get new customers through our own email platform, our own DSP. Reach out to me, vincent@stirista.com. Thank you so much for all the emails that I do get. Are they always for the reason I requested? No, but you're listening, and that's a good thing. The other thing, that's good. That's great, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you're tuning in to us on YouTube because he looks 10 years younger. My co-host, Mr. AJ Gupta. What's up, AJ?
Hey, Vincent. I feel 10 years older, though. This weekend, I played 6 tennis matches in 100-degree weather, so I'm a little toasty and lightheaded, but...
That doesn't sound great. That was a couple of days ago. You shouldn't still be feeling lightheaded, but...
No, I think the lightheaded part is the Advil PM I took after all the matches last night. So it's still in the system, I think.
You know, a lot of people ask me when I see them in person, listeners to the podcast, and they come up to me and they say a variety of great things, which we appreciate. But they're like, why is AJ playing tennis? And he tells us about his elbow, his knee. He's always hurt. I'm like, it's the love of the game. He's in it, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I think I am contemplating a future in pickleball, though. So I think it's a natural transition at my age.
I think so. I think that's why in my neighborhood here in Tribeca, they just they're putting in like over where the two major stores were, pickleball. I'm like, is it going to be people my age with knee braces on and elbow pads, just like reliving their glory days? But it's I'll give it a try as well. It's great. But I'm coming down to San Antonio very soon, ladies and gentlemen, for a visit to see AJ. I had to make sure he's in town. He's always eluding me, this guy, but he's going to be in town and it should be fun.
Yeah. Was it too cold for you in New York?
It was freezing. I know. I was like, oh, you know, July, San Antonio in July. It's beautiful. I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? But duty calls, ladies and gentlemen, it calls, going to see the great team down there, going to visit some of my amazing clients who are down there. It's I do it for them, but it's going to be great. One more news before we get to our guest. AJ, guess who was chosen to be the MC of the 40th annual, 40th year of the Silver Apples? This guy right here. I missed it last year because I had my 1 year anniversary, 10 year wedding anniversary. It feels like 1 year, honey. It feels like 1 year, Lauren, if you're listening. You're probably not. Anyway, 10-year anniversary, but I'm back again. We had a great Paul McDonough stepped in, but now I am back to host the 40th. Maybe I'm going to be calling people's names out there. So those listening, get those nominations in, but I'll be back, AJ. I hope you're in attendance.
I will definitely not miss that one.
That should be
anniversary of that.
40th, we're revisiting. We're going through the history of this industry, but enough about me, enough about you, AJ. I am excited about this guest. We have not had a company on like this. And this is such an amazing company. You know it. It's like, it's part of the pop culture now, right? As far as the commercials, but we're going to dig deeper. We're going to get inside the company. This is an amazing organization that does more things than you think, right? And we have an amazing guest today. We're so happy that we're getting to talk to him. We're talking to Brad Barnett, Vice President, Enterprise Marketing at Nationwide. Nationwide, you know, it's already in my head. It, like the jingle comes to mind, right?
Hey, you're allowed. You can sing it.
Nationwide is on your side. All right. That's, I love it. It's just naturally comes to mind. Brad, what's going on, my friend? How are you?
I'm excited to be here. I appreciate the chance, Vincent and AJ.
Yeah, it's great. It's like part of, it's one of those things. And you smile. It brings a smile to your face when you talk about that. We're going to get into that in a moment. But Brad, for those listening, so your particular title, right? Tell us, people know Nationwide, or maybe they don't. So let's dig into Nationwide, because truthfully, frankly, I know it for insurance, right? That's what I know Nationwide for. But you and I talk, and it's so much more than that. Talk to us a little bit about Nationwide, and then I'd love to understand your role within the organization.
Yeah, well, I'll start with some advice to AJ first. He's got to find a good orthopedic surgeon. Because you know, if I talk to, I haven't really gotten into pickleball. I've done it a little bit, but I think I know at least a handful of guys who have torn an Achilles playing this already. And so every orthopedic surgeon in Ohio has a new boat, I think, because of all the number of Achilles injuries that are going on. So AJ, make sure you invest in a good surgeon, my friend, because chances are you'll need it.
That's funny, Brad. I have started hearing about pickleball injuries as well. And then I think the other people that are doing well now are tennis coaches, because pickleball players have a lot more money. So they are switching to pickleball coaching.
You know what? That is capitalism at its best. You go where there's opportunity, right? Skate to where the puck is going. But I'm excited to be here. You know, I get to work for a pretty awesome brand and company. And Vincent, to your point, I often find, as I kind of talk about Nationwide, most of the time people don't know all that we do. And so just to kind of give you a little bit of the 40,000 foot view, it's almost a 100-year-old brand. And so 2026, we will celebrate our 100th year. And you'll find in this category a lot of old brands, you know, not just in insurance, but financial services as well. And, you know, I always tell people it's hard to do things for 100 years consistently. And so shout out to not just Nationwide, but the category itself. So excited about what 2026 means to the company. But to your point, Vincent, most people know us for what was really kind of our history, which is auto and home insurance. The origins of the company actually start from a group of farmers back in 1926, who at the time felt they were building a company that best met their needs and not the needs of, you know, urban cities. They felt like rural America was not necessarily having their needs looked after from an insurance standpoint. So they created this. And you will find even 100 years later that the roots of how we grew up from, you know, being founded by farmers still persist today, whether that's representation on our board, our relationships with farm bureaus across the country, cooperatives. And you'll hear me say this a lot. We're top 10 in many categories most people wouldn't know. We're the number one farm insurer in the United States. Most people probably don't know that. But going back to our roots, you know, you can still see that kind of in the fabric of the company today. But to your point, you know, I think great brands kind of reimagine themselves over time. I mean, you can look at tons of brands who were originally one thing and became completely different as the world around them changed. Nationwide is kind of the same. I mean, we're a full service product division across every insurance product you can imagine, but the biggest part of our company is actually financial services. And again, most people wouldn't know that. And when I say financial services, I mean retirement plans, annuities, life insurance, corporate solutions, things like corporate owned life insurance. You know, if you were to take our revenue across the company, it's about 70%. Insurance is about 30%. But we've spent billions of dollars, and the category has spent billions of dollars talking about a couple of products, and therefore you become known for that in addition to your history. And so, you know, it's been exciting to see the company change. You know, in my world, sitting in enterprise marketing, we get to touch a little bit of everything. And so we work with every major business, core business unit we have, which requires us to be really smart in a lot of different categories and businesses that we get to sit next to and work closely to. And so it's a fun part of the job, but a challenging part of the job. as we work with core businesses to actually meet the objectives that they have.
I have not heard of the, until talking to you, the financial aspect, but, and perhaps that's because, Brad, is that more of a business to business play where the others, you know, to the end consumer? Is that kind of one of the reasoning behind it?
Yeah, I mean, we made a strategic choice, you know, a handful of years ago to be less about direct to consumer and more about B2B. And that's a different marketing strategy. It's a different relationship building strategy, as you guys know. And, you know, many brands in our category aren't that dissimilar to others where if you want to achieve some sort of scalable economics in your business, you've got to get to mass distribution type of opportunities. If you're, you know, a packaged goods company, maybe that's being a merchant on Amazon, or maybe it's being on the shelf at Walmart. For us, it is being on the shelf of some of the largest financial firms and insurance brokers and agencies in the U.S. And so that for sure has been part of the evolution for us and why we're in the kinds of businesses that we are in. We still sell direct to consumer. Again, we have so many different lines of business that to be successful in many of them, you have to have multiple go-to-market strategies and channels. And direct to consumer is one of them, but it's not the prominent focus of the company.
Brad, everybody talks about the jingle that Nationwide has. What's the origin story behind that?
Yeah. This is a fun story to tell. So it dates back to 1967. It was created by, you know, one of the most famous ad agencies in the world in Ogilvy, who surprisingly enough is our creative agency today. And so we still have the original memo written in 1967 from Ogilvy that gave Nationwide marketing executives at the time a list of logo or a list of jingle options. And the one that won out was actually a little bit different than what you hear today. So instead of Nationwide is on your side, it was the man from Nationwide is on your side. And obviously over time that evolved into what you know today. And so, you know, really about 10 years ago, we brought that back to life. And I can link this to the strategies that we had in live sports and entertainment. 10 years ago, we started our relationship with Peyton Manning. We became an NFL sponsor. And you saw us start to really take this jingle and bring it back to life to try and reinvigorate what the brand promise was of the company. And it's really kind of taken on a life of its own, whether it was, you know, Timothy Chalamet and Saturday Night Live, whether it's being a Jeopardy question. You know, if you ask Peyton Manning today, he will go to restaurants and the wait staff will jingle to him as they talk to him because they've seen this on TV. And so it's really kind of taken on a life of its own. But I'll give our creative team a lot of credit, too. For the past 10 years, we found different ways to reimagine utilizing music and the jingle and the creative. I mean, from a marketing perspective, I think everybody that has a brand would love to have a hallmark like this. If for nothing else, the moment you put some form of creative in front of an end user, an end broker, an end customer, you automatically get the benefit of brand linkage and immediate credit back to the work performing better because of the jingle. And so there's the emotional aspect of it, but there is a hard-hitting component to it that drives performance because of the brand linkage it gives us.
Absolutely. I think the linkage by itself is such a powerful free advertising almost that you have. You've worked at Nationwide for quite a long time. What changes have you seen over the period of time you've been there?
Yeah. So I, in August, actually a couple months, I celebrate my 20th year here. And I remember it says my first job out of undergrad, and I was more of a technology focused person. I went to undergrad for MIS. I remember thinking I wanted to be in that space because those were the jobs of the future, cybersecurity, software development, et cetera. And ultimately just kind of felt like I didn't want to do that. And took that experience. And my goal became, I want to get inside the door of a big company and find the thing that I'm passionate about. And that became marketing. And over those 20 years, to your point, AJ, like a lot of the category has changed. On the marketing side of things, you've seen brand spend, ad spend just continue to skyrocket. Post-COVID, probably not as much. But, you know, around the point of COVID, you had the category spending $9 billion a year in measured media. Two of the largest spenders being disruptors, if you look over those 20 years in Geico and Progressive, who found, you know, ways to take their cost structure in a more efficient way and deploy more ad dollars and change the game from a campaign and brand perspective. So, you know, brands had to respond to that. Nationwide certainly had to as well, as we evolved. And I mentioned not just the way in which we invest marketing dollars, but the way in which we go to market over that time frame has changed too. I mean, you've seen the local agent kind of be the original fabric of doing business, whether that was an exclusive agent who maybe only sells your brand, and Nationwide's history was largely based on exclusive agents, or an independent agent that represents lots of brands. That's one of the other things that's changed for us. We've actually gone more focused to independent agents than exclusives. And then you've also seen the aspect of digital and direct to consumer really kind of take off, and every brand have to think about their user experience and focus that way. So, you know, I would say the other big aspect has been just the persistence of weather in the category. I mean, if you look at the property and casualty insurance businesses, whether it's wildfires or hurricanes, every brand has had to adapt their go-to-market strategies for the reasons of profitability. It's a challenging space right now, and brands have had to rethink the way in which they do business with agents and customers to make sure that at the end of the day, we can fulfill everybody's needs by being profitable and being future-focused. But those are the big, over the past 20 years, those are probably some of the more monumental changes.
And Brad, let's talk about, you know, the NFL, right? I see if those of you tuning in on YouTube, you could see the Super Bowl emblem on the shirt there. And talk to us, Brad. You know, I love Peyton Manning. I'm an Eli Manning fan first. New Yorker.
We like him too.
I like it. Yeah, I love Eli. I'm a New Yorker. Two rings. I appreciate it. Talk to us about the partnership with the NFL, because perhaps, and was the jingle and all of that kind of around launching that with the NFL? Because now it's part of the vernacular, like I said.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I can remember the year was 2014, and that was when we signed the relationship with the NFL, when we signed the relationship with Peyton, and we made kind of the strategic choice to align some of our most crucial assets in the NFL. And candidly, if you look 10 years later, we're reinvigorating that strategy now for the brand again, because we've been an NFL partner now for 10 years and are continuing to do that. But, you know, I mentioned the brand went through these changes of distribution strategy, which requires us to think differently about how marketing spend is executed for a brand like us. We changed our strategy from more of an unaided awareness strategy, more to an aided awareness strategy, so that in our business, you need to be known and trusted. I mean, at the end of the day, people are going to ask you to protect their wealth, ask you to protect their most precious assets. And so being a brand that's trusted is something that end consumers care about, but it's something that the people who sell your products care about too. And we really felt like the NFL was a platform to give us more output per dollar spent than anything else. And so it's not the cheapest property in the world to be in, but it's one that has a lot of impact. I mean, if you look at the data, again, the data doesn't lie. So of the top 100 programs in the past year, 93 of them were NFL games. And so if you think about the impact of really kind of mass scalable eyeballs to make, you know, an impact on your results, the NFL is really number one, and there's not anything close.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I love the fact that, yeah, let's talk about anniversaries, right? It's like in 2 years, 100 years, right? You've been there 20 years, you know, in 2 years, there's a big event coming to in the United States area, especially right in New York, a big soccer match, right? So that might be something to wrap around. But I love the NFL. NFL is going global. I went to a game in London a few years ago. In Germany, I think they're opening it up to Mexico City. It's amazing, the impact, as there's a lot of different things changing with the NFL. I mean, not with NFL, but streaming. What's constant is I want to watch a live sporting event. I am not trying to find out about who won the game 3 hours later. No way. But I wanted to talk to you about your rise, right? 20 years. How do you still, Brad, stay on top of marketing trends?
I honestly think it's one of the more difficult challenges. Like, as you progress in your career, what I always tell people who are taking those leadership steps is it takes you further away from the work itself. And you have to find ways in which to continue to dip your toe into it, continue to roll the sleeves up, and continue to stay close to it. It's hard as a marketer because you loved doing the work. And then as you've continued to progress in your role as a leader, you maybe get to do less of it. And so you have to find the ways in which to actually stay connected. So I feel like I'm a sponge, you know, educationally. I listen to podcasts, I read, I try and, you know, follow up with as much of the trends that way that I feel like people are sharing. I mean, if you look at YouTube and X and LinkedIn alone, like I feel like you could get a master's in marketing by just reading through content and other experiences that people are having, because there's just so much free information that's out there. And so, you know, I think that that's a valuable thing, and you just got to dedicate the time and have the desire to do it. But again, like, and my team knows this, I will try and find ways to say, like, let me in there with you. Let me get under the hood. Let me roll up the sleeves. And obviously with what's, you know, going on in AI right now, there's probably never been, you know, a more important time for leaders to kind of get there and be curious and test into things themselves.
You know, you've been at Nationwide for 20 years, which is almost unheard of. And I'm sure there's a lot of marketing campaigns you're proud of, but is there one that stands out for you?
Yeah, it's funny. Nationwide, and when I went into this, I definitely wasn't thinking I'm going to be here for, you know, for as long as I have, but I feel blessed that I have been. There's a lot of long-term Nationwiders that are here. I mean, it's not uncommon to see 25, 30, 30, 35 years at the company. And, you know, I think people get here and find that there's opportunity to do lots of different things inside of a big company. You know, I didn't mention this up front, but, you know, we just surpassed $60 billion in revenue last year. We've grown by $14 billion in the past 3 years. We're a Fortune 80 company with lots of things to do. And so I think people can have really diverse experiences here without feeling like your career stalls out and that you're not still kind of learning and growing. So I think that's why you have people here that are here so long. On the campaign side of things, I can think of a couple. And, you know, one really kind of dates back to, you know, the launch of the work with Peyton. I mean, if you can remember, I can remember the spot. Most people can. The chicken parm, you taste so good commercial with Peyton was really kind of a jumping off point for us. And we'd had some great work kind of leading into that with, you know, a campaign called Join the Nation, which featured Julia Roberts. She was the VO for that campaign. It was really kind of the origin story of making the brand really relevant with millions of consumers. And then you take Peyton and the jingle. And if you tie all those things together, because from, you know, we were really marrying really amazing creative work, but inside of scalable media platforms. So think the Super Bowl, think the Olympics, a lot of live sports and entertainment properties. And that's where you have to get really good at negotiating smart media deals, potentially multi-year deals. How are you getting the most bang for the buck to put your creative inside the right position to be successful? And during that time frame, again, more of an unaided strategy where we were trying to take up real estate in consumers' minds. You know, we reached the highest levels of unaided awareness in the history of the company during that time frame. And so it was a really exciting time as a marketer to see the work working and making a difference on how your brand was known.
With how you guys are growing, how do you kind of, when you are looking at marketing campaigns, how are you measuring the success for it?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think depending on the role that you're in, and again, like the roles inside of marketing here, you have people who do more enterprise brand related work. You have people that are really kind of like full funnel strategies. So you might be thinking about what your brand measures are, but you're following everything throughout the funnel to understand, are you growing new customers? Are you doing it at an efficient rate? And so because we have so many different roles, it kind of depends on where you are. But if I were to kind of break it down a little bit, you know, from a brand health perspective, you know, this is where you have to be in it for the long haul. When we talk about changing brand perceptions, beliefs, I mean, you know things about brands and they often stick with you for a very long time. And so unless you can catch, you know, lightning in a bottle and that key moment really kind of accelerates how people view you in some ways, you know, so we have ongoing, consistent approaches to how we measure our brand. And that is with consumers, it is with the people who sell our products, our partners, and we want to understand what they think about us, how likely they are to recommend us, do they know us, are we relevant, do they trust us. And again, like, that's something that takes time and consistency over time to kind of build that. But we absolutely track that, because for a brand like us, we have one brand that covers 10 different distinct businesses, and that's across consumers, partners. It can be a difficult challenge for the brand to work that hard across so many different groups. And so we have to have the right, you know, brand measures in place to understand, are we moving the dial or not? But for some of our marketers who sit really close to businesses and they have different investment strategies aligned to what those business goals are, you know, this is where the power of measurement, data, and analytics really kind of comes together, because you have to know, if my job is growth, am I driving new customers? Is my cost of acquisition in line with what it needs to be? Are the types of customers that I'm bringing in profitable? Am I growing relationships with them? And so it really just kind of depends on where you sit inside of our company. And we've got really smart kind of measurement strategies at each level. The other thing that I would say, because one of the teams that I'm accountable for is our innovation group, which is basically our version of R&D inside the company. And so oftentimes you're working on, you know, early stage businesses and products versus, you know, if it's sitting inside of a core business, it's more mature, you have access to, you know, large distribution, and your marketing strategies for early stage are different. I mean, most of the time you're acquiring users to get traction, to improve trial, to accelerate learning, to get the product market fit a little bit faster. And so, you know, your cost of acquisition might not be very good for the early parts, but obviously as you improve the user experience and get more adoption, the economics improve with more mass distribution. And so it really just kind of depends on where you sit in the company, but that's how we kind of think about it, at like the top of the house versus some marketers who maybe sit a little bit closer to our businesses.
Right. I want to take it back to, you pick up what you're saying there, and I want to uncover the role, like you said, enterprise. It could mean a variety of different things. And when it comes to Nationwide and all the different divisions, right, is some of your responsibilities getting some of the, is it the financial piece? Is it the insurance? Is it all of the above? Is it strategic partnerships with companies like the NFL? Or is it getting those suite of services into, you know, independent insurance provider? I'm just wondering, you know, the nitty gritty there, because it's a variety. Enterprise can mean a lot of different things. And then I want to ask you after that a question specifically on some of your background and on, you know, your history there. So
yeah,
let's tackle the first one.
Yeah, the first one's a great question. So the way that we think about, so I cover what we call enterprise marketing, but not surprisingly, there's a lot of people that touch the enterprise. And so specifically what I'm accountable for is I've got a few teams that literally support every business unit we have. And that's things like sports marketing and sponsorships, diverse marketing, and our live events group. And then I've got teams of marketers that support our R&D and kind of smaller and incubating businesses inside the portfolio. For Nationwide, being less than $1 billion in revenue is small. And so we oftentimes have kind of smaller and incubating businesses that sit outside of our core business, but the intention is to grow them and scale them and get them into the core, where I always say it gives them sunlight and water to actually grow into something more meaningful. And so we touch every business unit across those functions. But when we think about the enterprise, and I'll say this more from a brand perspective, where you're looking at being relevant, being known, and being trusted. I mean, we certainly play a role there with all of our efforts in diverse marketing, with all of our efforts in sports marketing, but it's a shared responsibility. I have a peer named Mike Boyd, who runs a team inside of marketing called Content and Delivery. And that's where you have a lot of your advertising, paid media, and social media work as well. So oftentimes we are attached at the hip. The NFL is a perfect and tangible example of that, where you're aligning sponsorship strategy, creative strategy, and media strategy, all working towards the same thing. But to distinguish that, we have teams of people that sit inside of our businesses that are accountable for distribution strategy. We partner with them on relationship building to get on the shelves themselves, but they're more accountable for that part of the business.
No, interesting. Yeah, I appreciate the breakdown, because especially, you know, that role, enterprise, and then within Nationwide, it can be a variety of things. So thank you for that. But also, I want to talk about, you started out product development, like you said, and How did that help you transition into marketing? And you know, I would imagine with the R&D piece of it, right? It kind of felt right at home. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, I always tell people I didn't do this intentionally, but I kind of lucked out in it. When I first started at Nationwide, I started in the business. And it was in our auto insurance business, which was a very prominent, publicly focused line of the company. Obviously, we were doing a lot of campaigns for that. So I came in and was able to cut my teeth on understanding competitors, understanding pricing strategies. And that translated into a product development role. And product development, you know, in many companies probably sits inside of marketing. For us, it sat inside the business. And what's unique about that is, so product development and auto insurance at the time was about finding ways to differentiate your product. What are the right features? What are the right experiences? And at the end of the day, you've got to get your distribution folks who want to sell those things and consumers to want to buy them. And so, you know, and not to mention the fact that in insurance, every state is individually regulated. So if I want to roll out this set of features, I've got to do it 50 different times. It's not just one, you turn it on and it works for everybody. You've got to have specific strategies where you are filing with departments of insurance. Your technology might be different for that state. Your sales teams might be different for that state. And so I really kind of focused on getting really good at that part of it, which helped me again, just I got a crash course in the business and understanding how to get work done in there. But it was through that job that I got to work so closely with teams of people in marketing. And at the time, you know, our marketing teams were hiring a lot of classically trained marketers, packaged goods experience, and I didn't fit that bill. That wasn't my background. And so it took someone kind of taking a chance on me. And, you know, thankful that I did and, you know, really happy with all the different things that I've gotten to do in marketing by doing that. But when I made that transition, like I knew so much more, I felt, about the business side of it than a lot of my marketers. And what that helped me with was influence, a seat at the table. We encourage marketers so much to have strong business acumen, to know the business like someone in finance would know it. And I felt like I was a living example of that when I transitioned into that role. And I felt like it helped me accelerate what marketing could do because our product teams were really connected and felt comfortable with my understanding of how to be successful there.
So Brad, we have a staple question we ask every guest here on Marketing Stir. So I'm sure you get a lot of junk email and LinkedIn messages based on your role. What's a message that gets a response from you? And more importantly, what's one that really annoys you?
I'll be honest. So like everybody else, I get a lot of email. To be candid, the way that our email systems work, most of the time it automatically siphons stuff to spam and I don't see it anyways, but sometimes some stuff kind of makes its way through. And then obviously get the same kind of connections on LinkedIn that everybody does. I would say 99% of the time I don't respond to them. Now the times where I've at least kind of paused, or maybe I'm like, well, that's interesting, let me go do my own research, is number one, have I heard of this company already from a peer of mine? Can they demonstrate that they know a little bit about my category versus me having to teach them and get them up to speed? You can tell really quickly if it's someone just trying to sell you something or if it's somebody who's trying to solve a problem for you in some ways. And so anytime that I feel like this person's gone the extra mile in some way, I am more prone to say, let's have a conversation than someone who feels like they're just trying to kind of get me into the funnel, so to speak. Every once in a while, a good subject line will make me pause. I had one recently. We launched some new creative with Peyton in the draft this past year, a few months ago. And he had a line in the commercial that talks about quarter zip drip or something like that. He was trying to be funny about the clothes he was wearing. And someone sent me an email with that in the headline and it immediately captured me. Like I stopped and read his email. So again, a good subject line can make all the difference in the world. That was somebody who obviously saw something and connected it back to us in a way that really kind of made me stop.
I love that. I know the quarter zip drip because when Eli and Peyton are doing Monday night, they always have the quarter zip. Do you ever see when the Kelsey brothers were on, Brad?
And they, I didn't see that one. No.
They wore the quarter zip just for them. It was funny. It was great. So Brad, before we wrap up here, we appreciate your time so much. We'd like to get to know you personally. What do you like doing out there in Ohio? You know, who do you root for? Who are your teams? I'd love to know. What are some of your hobbies? What do you do on the weekend?
I'm a fan of sports in general, so I watch a lot of sports, but there's only one team that, like, if they lose, I'm probably not fun to be around for most people, and that's Ohio State football. Thank you very much. The Ohio State University, who should be very good this year. If not, I'm not sure what the fans are going to do. But that's probably the only team. I mean, I find myself, if I had to pick it, I always get the question of who your favorite NFL team is. If I had to pick one, I'd probably find myself doing two things. One, rooting for whichever NFL team has the most Buckeyes on it. And for a while, that was like the Saints for a long time. I also find myself rooting for Joe Burrow a lot. So QB of the Bengals, he's an Ohio kid, went to Ohio State for most of his career before he transferred to LSU. He's just an easy guy to kind of root for. So, but again, like the only team I care about if they lose or not is Ohio State football. Things that I love to do, honestly, I have one tonight, is I'm really intentional about my after work relationship building strategy. And relationship building sounds too formal. Like, I enjoy this time with friends and coworkers and peers and partners, but like that breaking bread over the dinner table, that connection point kind of after work, I utilize that a lot to maintain friendships, relationships, partnerships. And so, you know, in addition to like, you know, the thing that I could say probably consumes most of my life outside of work is my kids, and in all the right positive ways, because they're big into sports. I coach teams. But if I had to pick one kind of non-kid related that I enjoy doing, it's spending time with people out at a happy hour or having dinner together.
No, I love that. I couldn't agree more. Just those relationships. I'm fortunate here in New York City and in Manhattan, where a lot of people come through, friends. It's a nice destination. So it's always,
I'm sure, like, that's probably good and bad for you at times.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. It's like, oh, I'm in New York City. It's like, I need a place to stay. I'm like, what do you mean you need a place to stay? You're in your 40s. Get a hotel. What are you, crazy? I was like, what is this? I think I have extra rooms. But yeah, it's also a good time where, you know, a lot of, you know, people like yourself or people that I had on the podcast, they may live in Ohio, but chances are they're maybe taking a trip to New York City. And it's like great to meet with them, you know, in face to face. So that is awesome. Brad, thank you so much for spending time with us. I love the way you break it down. The passion shines through. You can tell that you've been there for 20 years. And I love what Nationwide is doing. So keep up the amazing work. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Brad Barnett. He is the Vice President, Enterprise Marketing at Nationwide. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. Thank you for your time. Thank you for all the comments. Keep coming. Keep them coming up to us and telling us how much you enjoy the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Vincent. That's Brad. That's AJ. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening to the Marketing Stir podcast by Stirista. Please like and subscribe. If you're interested in being a guest on the podcast, please email us at themarketingstir@stirista.com.